Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
There's no agreement on numbers, and nothing will be agreed to until everything is agreed to.
House Speaker John Boehner, with 1 week to go now until much of the federal government would shut down if Democrats and Republicans can't agree on a budget for the 6 months that remain in this fiscal year. The biggest divisions at this point, however, may be between Republican leaders like Boehner, who might be ready to make a deal for about $33 billion in domestic spending cuts, and Tea Party supporters like Indiana's Mike Pence, who demand $60 or $100 billion.
If liberals in the Senate would rather play political games and shut down the government instead of making a small down payment on fiscal discipline and reform, I say shut it down.
Congressman Mike Pence of Indiana. Let's get a take on this from a member of our local congressional delegation, freshman Republican Nan Hayworth, a New York physician who also has ideas about Medicare reforms, which could be proposed by the GOP next week, and replacing the Obama health reforms. Her 19th congressional district runs roughly from Mount Kisco to Pawling on the New York-Connecticut border, west to about Warwick and Middletown. We'll also ask her about Indian Point. Hi, Congressman Hayworth. Welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning, Brian. Glad to be here.
Are you more in the Boehner camp or the Mike Pence camp on budget negotiations?
You know, there are no camps in the House Republican Conference. There really are not. Brian, this is a matter of working together to solve an enormous problem, and the wave election in November definitely had meaning, and the American people want action. They want us to act according to the common sense solutions that we propose to them, and that's what we're doing. So the question that has to be asked is, why is the Senate leadership divided from the American people?
Would you vote for a bill with about $33 billion in cuts?
I'm going to vote for the bill that we in the House Republican Conference determined to be the best bill we can bring forward for the American people, Brian, and it's it really is that simple, and this is not about a number that is in the press today. This is about, again, approaching this problem and solving it as expeditiously and constructively as possible.
But one more number question, and then we'll move on. Would you be willing to see a government shutdown, like Congressman Pence apparently would, over the difference between about $33 million and about $60 billion?
Again, Brian, I can't emphasize enough that what we are aiming to do is to work in behalf of the American people, to do what they told us to do. We are not aiming to create new obstacles. That is what the Senate leadership certainly seems to be aiming to do. And I think you have to ask them if that's what they're looking for, because it certainly sounds as though that is the pertinent question.
One scenario, though, if I can ask you a political question, to meet the Senate where they are with their majority, is that the House might pass a budget with not enough Republicans to do it on their own, so the Boehner coalition could become more moderate Republicans and more moderate Democrats, and the Tea Party faction gets edged aside for this vote, along with the more liberal faction of the Democratic Party. Do you see that happening in the next week?
You know, I see a lot of good minds at work in the House Republican Conference in particular. And I know that, you know, we talk with our colleagues in the Senate, and there is no factionalization here. It is a matter of a lot of good minds who are listening to their constituents and working very, very hard on trying to reach the best solution we can.
Do you have any particular items that you're most interested in seeing cut that are either, you know, destructive to the economy or the American people, or that for some reason, you know, you think are really important to make sure that they're included in the cuts?
Well, I think there are opportunities in every portion of the federal budget on a number of different levels. And what we want to do for the American people is assure them that we are going to be relieving the burdens of excessive regulation, for example. On the Financial Services Committee, obviously, there are very costly avalanches of regulation that are due to fall on our small businesses or entrepreneurs or employers and large businesses, too. And those are crippling the economy and holding back job creation from where it should be. So
and
that's
is that part
one
of the budget?
Which I'm particularly working.
Sorry, is that part of the budget or is that a different realm?
Well, some of these aspects actually came into the continuing resolution for the remainder of the fiscal year, H.R. 1, that we passed in the House majority, and it was, we passed in the House, that is to say, and it was rejected by the Senate. And some of these things are certainly going to be a matter of the budget, so everybody is eagerly awaiting what one particularly fine mind on these things, Paul Ryan, as our budget chair, is due to release very soon.
Freshman Congresswoman Nan Hayworth, Republican from Mount Kisco and points north and west. Let's touch on some other things. Now, you were quoted on Newsmax this week saying about Medicare, mm-hmm. quote, doctors cannot afford to provide care at the rate of reimbursement that Medicare insists that they accept, unquote. And you think the Obama health reforms would make that worse. Can you give us some details about that?
Well, Brian, essentially, what has happened over the years is that Medicare has constrained physicians to provide care at a designated rate that isn't something that our providers, and it's not just doctors, but let's talk about doctors for a moment, that our providers really haven't been able to negotiate with Medicare on a sensible basis, on a common sense basis that would take into account the cost of providing care in a state like New York, which has particularly onerous malpractice tort law burdens, for example. So we have been stuck with a progressively deteriorating situation in which it actually, unfortunately, ends up costing money to care for our Medicare patients. And the physicians want to be able to care for their Medicare patients, but they have to be able to afford to keep the doors open. And this really is what a lot of practices are facing. And you've seen some practices leave New York because of it.
But next week, I gather Republican leaders will take the risk, have the courage to propose longer-term deficit solutions that will include Medicare reforms. So if reduced payments to doctors would be off the table, how else would the nation's biggest deficit problem, the projected growth of Medicare, be dealt with?
Well, it's a multifaceted solution. It may involve, for example, allowing flexibility in the way, and certainly on Newsmax I said that, flexibility in the way in which doctors and patients treat a given visit or given a service that's provided, allowing doctors and patients to work among themselves as far as what the Medicare reimbursement constitutes of the of their reimbursement schedule, and that's one aspect. What we're aiming to do, Brian, in essence, is to assure that Medicare will work sensibly for the future of all Americans who are going to need it. And right now, it's not sustainable, and people know that, and they're ready to listen to common sense solutions that are based on what we've been hearing from them.
Have you been in on these talks in the Republican conference as one of the few physicians in Congress? Can you give us any sense at this point of what some of the biggest items might be that we're going to hear regarding Medicare entitlement reform proposals?
I am a member of the House Doctors Caucus, and we have been meeting on our own to work on various aspects of the solution to this Medicare challenge. The committees of jurisdiction, Ways and Means, Energy and Commerce, Education and Labor are all working on particular pieces, and Judiciary, of course, on liability reform. But in terms of specific budget proposals, I have not been privy to that particular process. Now,
as a doctor, is it a fiction to say that we can control healthcare costs without getting between the doctor-patient relationship? I think Democrats and Republicans get between the relationship in different ways, but experts seem to believe that doctors and patients left to their own with insurance paying for most things will agree to too many tests and too many treatments. Do you believe that?
Brian, ultimately, it can absolutely be a matter of allowing providers and patients, and certainly doctors are a major subset of providers, but not the only ones, of allowing Americans among themselves to work out what common sense would dictate they do. You don't have to have an intervening body make these decisions for them, but you do have to structure our financing of healthcare rather differently. And indeed, in some places in the country, that's been begun. And I point to Healthy Indiana, which Governor Mitch Daniels, who was a Republican, and his Democratic state legislature formulated in 2007 for their state employees and their Medicaid recipients. And if you give people health, the ability to set up health savings accounts, they will be able to work through with providers, with their doctors in this case, what makes sense in terms of how they pay for their medications, their care, procedures, diagnostics. It can be done.
And what about Medicare in that respect?
Well, the same sort of arrangement could certainly apply to Medicare for the future. And I think those of us who, I'm 51 years old, those of us who are in that age range and below are going to be thinking, again, with common sense and creatively, together with people like Paul Ryan, together with our House Republican conference, and not just our Republican conference, but our Democratic colleagues as well, you know, as to, you know, everybody knows. Americans are smart people. And I think one of the biggest aspects of all of this is that we have to treat our American citizens as though they are men and women of intelligence who indeed can exert their common sense in these sorts of situations. We do not have to have a federal government mind us in every respect. We do need a federal government to provide the framework of liberties and to assure that the civil rights guaranteed and that all the rights guaranteed in the Bill of Rights are carried through.
All right, changing topics. Do you have a position on renewing Indian Point's license?
I have spoken with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. I have spoken with our Westchester County authorities as well, our public safety authorities, and they were very willing to answer all questions that that I, in behalf of our constituents, posed to them about their assessment of the continued safe operation of Indian Point in the present time as it undergoes relicensing, and I'm confident that they are pursuing a very well thought out process. They will be reexamining their criteria for evaluation in the coming year, based on lessons that are learned and are ongoing from what's happening at Fukushima Daiichi. So,
is Japan and Fukushima Daiichi changing your thinking about Indian Point?
About Indian Point per se, it has not. But certainly, we all, I'm a scientist, we all take into account, as intelligent people, new information that we may not have considered before. So, you know, certainly we are in a highly seismically active area of the planet, but not one that is on a major subduction trench and not one that is subject to the risk of tsunami. So, you know, we take all those thoughts into account as we assess the immediate range as well as mid and long term. So I don't have any immediate concerns about the safe operation of Indian Point based on everything I've heard.
All right. Before you go, can you talk for a minute about your experience in Congress so far? You've been there 3 months. Is it about like what you expected?
Well, I will tell you, Brian, that it is such an intense job to present oneself to the constituents of a district as a challenger candidate that I was really completely focused, and rightly so, on our district during the campaign. So I didn't have much in the way of preconceived notions about the way Congress worked, and I will tell you it has been a great privilege and honor and an inspiration to find that the men and women whom our public has elected over years past in our conference and among Democratic colleagues as well. There are great hearts and minds in that House of Representatives, and all of us are there with the intent of serving the American people and providing a better future for our citizens. And the key is, how do we work together to make sure that the means by which our legislative actions will carry out this great mission. How do we make sure that the means are right? I'm a small government advocate, obviously, so that's the point of view that we are seeking to carry through to liberate the American people, if you will, from an overly invasive federal government. But it's been a real thrill to work with a tremendous range of talent in our staffs as well. And I think we can all feel confident that there really is a dedication to doing things right, and there's a tremendous energy here.
Let me follow up on one little piece of what you said about everybody there trying to work for what they see as the best interests of the American people. Do you think the media too often treat politicians as if they're just self-interested and lose sight of the fact that even if they come from different ideologies and have some different interests and different ties, that basically they're working from, you know, their own vantage points, but out of a sense of public service?
I think it would be very helpful if members of the press did try to focus on what unites us rather than on what they perceive as dividing us. I agree with you. And I think we could have a far more productive debate and discussion and work together to solve these problems, because Americans tell us time and time again, in the polling that's done all the time, that they don't want the rancor. You know, they don't want the divisiveness. I certainly am ready to and have been pursuing a course of integrity and honesty and a positive, constructive course. And I think it would be great if our media could focus on that as well. I think it would be very helpful.
So what does unite us? What unites you and some of your Democratic colleagues, let's say?
A fervent desire to assure a great future for the generations to come. I'm the daughter of an immigrant, as are so many, or the daughters and sons of immigrants, of course, are throughout our conference and the Democratic caucus. We know firsthand what it means to choose to become an American. My greatest blessing is to have been born an American, other than to have my family. And why? Because that promise of freedom and opportunity has been unique in all the world and in the history of the world. And I know that everyone in that body cherishes that thought. But my view of government, and that's shared throughout, I think, the Republican conference, I wouldn't presume to speak for every member, but I'm sure that's the guiding philosophy, is that the federal government should not be the ultimate provider of our livelihoods, of managing every single aspect of our lives. It should allow us the freedom to thrive and to let enterprise thrive. That's the way we really create jobs. People are desperate to have jobs and opportunity. 14 million Americans need to have these opportunities, the promise of America. And I think we do it by releasing the pressures that the federal government has placed on our entrepreneurs and our providers and our job growers over the past several years. And that's the difference.
Freshman Republican Congresswoman Nan Haworth, also a physician, who was elected last fall to the 19th Congressional District seat, which runs roughly from Mount Kisco to Pauling on the New York-Connecticut border, west to about Warwick and Middletown. Continued good luck. We look forward to speaking to you many more times.
As do I. Thanks, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC will continue to speak to Republicans and Democrats from our local congressional delegation as this federal government shutdown deadline looms 1 week from today. Coming up next, how Libya and its rebels each get their arms. Stay with us.